Many Republicans in the U.S. Senate say they won't support a proposed plan for an independent investigation of the January 6th events at the nation's capital. The week in Washington, we'll check in on efforts to establish a bipartisan commission to investigate the Capitol attacks, along with some of the other big stories in national news. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see a bipartisan commission on January 6th move forward? How would you feel if it doesn't? Why do you think it's needed or not needed in your view? What would you want to see them look at if this existed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill covering House leadership. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Good to be back with you.
All right. This thing passed the House. First of all, give us some background, Scott, on what happened in the House, the negotiations that led to the current makeup of this legislation.
Well, this is a 9/11 style commission, similar to the bipartisan independent commission that was created in the wake of the 9/11 attacks back in 2001. And, it's been a long road. I mean, talks first started for January 6th commission shortly after the attack on the Capitol that day. And, the calls for such a commission were from both sides of the aisle. Now, those talks had broken down after Nancy Pelosi laid out some of her demands that she wanted this to be more of a Democratic heavy commission, more Democrats than Republicans, because they control the levers of power in Washington. She did tip it more towards the Democrats, but in recent weeks, as the impasse had continued, she began to give in to some of the Republican demands, including having this really be a equally balanced commission, 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, appointed by the leaders of the Congress, the 4 leaders. And secondly, that this would be a commission that where Democrats and Republicans would have equal subpoena power to call witnesses under oath. And so because of those concessions that Nancy Pelosi gave to Republicans, nearly 36 signed on last week and voted with all of the Democrats in a big bipartisan vote to establish this commission. That included the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump for his role in sort of egging on that pro-Trump mob on January 6th, but also a number of more institutionalists on the Republican side of the aisle who believe that Congress needs to have some sort of formal record to study the events leading up to January 6th and then what happened in terms of the breakdown in security on that day. And that leads us to where we are right now, which is now Chuck Schumer has teed up a vote in the United States Senate for tomorrow. This would be a test vote. Right now, things are not looking so great because of a number of dynamics at play.
Right. Let's talk about that. This is one of them Senate votes where really the threshold is 60 under the filibuster rules as they exist. What are the prospects for getting Republicans to join in with the 50 Democrats to hit that threshold?
Right. So that magic number that Democrats are looking at is 10 Republicans that they will need to break that Republican filibuster. Right now, only 2 Republicans, Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, have signed on and said they will be yes votes. But again, they need 10. And, even some of the 7 Republicans who voted to convict Donald Trump in his impeachment trial are saying they will not be supporting this legislation. That includes Richard Burr of North Carolina. Others are on the fence and still trying to work their way through this bill. One of those is Susan Collins, who's negotiating with some moderates on the other side of the aisle, like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, on some tweaks and amendments to the legislation. Namely, she wants to ensure that there are that Republicans have the ability to hire and name staff who will be doing the bulk of the investigative work on for this commission. And so there, you know, some things are still in flux and up in the air, but when you sort of take a step back and look at it, it's really difficult to see how Democrats will get 10 Republicans to cross the aisle and support this thing, especially when Mitch McConnell has called the legislation slanted and unbalanced. He said yesterday that he'd rather focus on what Joe Biden is doing in his administration rather than looking backwards at the 2020 election and the events of January 6th. So that's sort of where we are in the Senate. Right now, it doesn't look good for the prospects of this bill.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national news. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the possibility of a January 6th commission and looking ahead, more infrastructure. 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Richard is with us in Milwaukee. Richard, hi.
Hi. This totally floors me why people like Senator Johnson and other senators in other states would not be in favor of this commission. If they really think that it, and sincerely think that it's just involved tourists or Antifa or whatever, you'd think they would want a commission to vindicate them. As it is, all the time they're being mocked for their outrageous statements about it, but I suspect that they knowingly are lying through their teeth and don't really want to find out the truth.
Richard, thanks for the call. Richard, referring to Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, talking about the mostly peaceful protest, a Republican congressman whose name I can't remember right now, saying they were behaving like tourists inside the White House, inside the Capitol, excuse me. Scott, can you talk about some more of that strain of Republican argument when it comes to the January 6th events?
Well, that strain of Republicanism is really aligned with Donald Trump, are some of his most fervent supporters in the Congress, including, as a caller mentioned, Senator Johnson, the congressman you're referring to, Andrew Clyde, is a freshman from Georgia, a Republican, who also is a big supporter of Donald Trump. And so a lot of the Trump supporters, their argument, well, number one, they've had some pretty jarring statements in recent weeks, calling some of the rioters who obviously were violent and injuring police officers, as was captured in numerous videos, calling, you know, some of them tourists, or saying that they were no more harmful than tourists. Those have been pretty jarring statements for people like myself and other journalists and other lawmakers who were in the Capitol that day, who personally witnessed some of the violence and saw the injuries firsthand and saw, you know, police officers in real agony and pain. But, you know, some of their arguments has been that there are numerous investigations underway, and that's the big point that they are making, is that there are congressional committees, at least a half a dozen on both sides of the Capitol, that are already digging into various aspects of January 6th. In fact, we will be getting some reports back from some of those committees in the coming weeks. Also, another argument we've heard is that the FBI has already made hundreds of arrests and has charged people in some of these crimes, and they are slowly and methodically working their way through these cases, and prosecutions will be obviously the next step here. And so that's been the argument from many of the Republicans who are opposed to a January 6th commission, is that there are, you know, already investigations underway from both the executive branch and the FBI and the congressional legislative branch.
And Scott, before we move on from this topic, you mentioned that the Republican argument against the commission is we should be looking at the current president and moving forward, not looking back. But you wrote recently that former President Trump is making it harder to do that, still in his statements focusing on the 2020 election. We've got the audit-like thing going on in Arizona. A lot of Republicans definitely wanting to still focus on the 2020 election. Can you talk about that balancing act?
Yeah, it really undercuts the argument from McConnell to say we want to look forward, we want to focus on what they see as the dangerous, radical policies of President Biden, when the leader of their party, Donald Trump, is still putting out statements, really multiple statements a day. If you look on his blog. Raising concerns about the 2020 election. In fact, he's still very much focused on the 2020 election. Almost everything is aimed towards raising doubt about the election last fall, and so it's put Republicans in a very difficult spot. And the other thing I would just point out quickly is that because it looks like Republicans are going to balk at this effort to form an independent outside commission, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have threatened to create then, what they call a special select committee that would be much more partisan. Certainly, Nancy Pelosi would get to pick the members on her side of the aisle. It would favor the Democrats. But that committee, similar to the Benghazi committee, before the 2016 election, could go on, this year as well as next year into the midterm election year, which could create headaches for Republicans.
We're picking up our talk now about the top stories in national politics with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He covers House leadership. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As we talk about ongoing, never-ending negotiations on infrastructure spending. Scott, we need like a little mini theme song because we talk about this every week. Still negotiations, right? Still things going on? They're still talking about infrastructure? What's happening?
Well, there's a lot of talks that are still going on. Number one, you have the talks between Republican Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and the White House. She's the lead negotiator for Republicans. And that's where we're seeing these offers being traded that you mentioned. Shelley Moore Capito's last offer was up from $800 billion. It's now about $1 trillion over 8 years. The last White House offer we saw was about $1.7 trillion from a few days ago. So they're about $700 billion off. A lot of money, a lot of distance between the two sides, and a lot of impatience on Capitol Hill. A lot of progressives are growing impatient. We're also seeing a separate group that has recently emerged in the last few days, led by some familiar faces, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Rob Portman. On the Republican side, on the Democrat side, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, along with John Tester. And so they're calling, this is sort of the plan B group. If talks break down between the White House and Shelley Moore Capito, then this group is looking to pick things up and put it back together and hopefully come to some sort of deal. This second group, the plan B group, is really focused on how you pay for such an infrastructure package. And a couple of those ideas is to tie the gas tax to inflation. These are some old ideas we've been hearing for a long time, but they keep coming up again and again. Another idea is to have electric vehicle owners contribute to the gas tax, perhaps through a mileage tax, because as you know, electric vehicle owners don't pay for gas. So these are some ideas they're kicking around. Going back to what I said earlier about the progressives, they feel like time is of the essence. They feel like the public is on the Democrat side and is behind Joe Biden, particularly on this issue of infrastructure. It's a popular issue for the American public. And so progressives are saying, look, we can't delay any longer and keep talking and talking to Republicans. We need to act, and we need to act in a big, bold way. They like that $2.3 trillion plan that Biden initially proposed. But Biden is somebody who's spent his entire lifetime working across the aisle, and he's not ready to throw in the towel on these bipartisan talks.
On the subject of how to pay for it, Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware was on NPR this morning talking about the negotiations. Here's some of the talk about paying for a plan.
Last year, we passed on a bipartisan basis $4 trillion in pandemic relief and recovery. I think in the end, a lot of this infrastructure bill will use some of the previously appropriated funds that went to states, and some of it will just not be paid for if we want to get it done on a bipartisan basis.
Now, I understand at some points President Biden said he wanted it all paid for. He was hoping to do it by scrapping some of the 2017 tax cuts passed by Republicans. Republicans say we're not going to do that. So how important is it to everybody, Scott, to say, OK, if we're spending X amount on infrastructure, we raise an equal amount of revenue?
Yeah, to roll back the 2017 Trump tax cuts, Mitch McConnell has said that's a non-starter for his side of the aisle. And that's why you've seen in recent days this new idea of what Chris Coons was talking about, unused COVID relief funds that could be somehow transferred to pay for infrastructure and transportation spending. It's an interesting idea. As the economy starts to heat back up, although, it's sort of been touch and go, the idea is that maybe there will be some leftover unused COVID relief funds that could be transferred over for infrastructure spending. It remains to be seen. I think Biden and his team, that there's a struggle inside the White House whether or not to keep talking, keep negotiating. There's Democrats who were there in 2009 who are part of the Obama White House who have a long memory and remember how Republicans continue to try to negotiate on Obamacare, and people at the end of the day, Republican votes were not there, and Democrats felt that they wasted a lot of time negotiating with Republicans when in the end, Democrats had to go it alone on Obamacare. And so there's a feeling, let's just not waste any more time. Let's just use the budget reconciliation process like they did with the COVID relief earlier this year. Let's use it again and pass this thing with Democratic votes only. And let's end the bipartisan talks.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national news. I want to turn to one more, Scott, before our half hour passes us by. Republican member of Congress, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, some of her fellow Republicans talking about maybe ousting her from their caucus, or if not that, at least criticism over recent statements. What is going on?
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene has been in the headlines, it seems, the entire year since her arrival on Capitol Hill. The latest comment she made was equating mask requirements on the House floor and this idea of vaccine passports to the Nazis' treatment of the Jews during World War II, obviously, which she's talking about the Holocaust, the death and murder of 6 million Jews during that war. And so obviously that has created enormous outrage on both sides of the aisle. It was the rare instance where we've seen the Republican leaders rebuke one of their own, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Kevin McCarthy called her comments wrong and appalling. Mitch McConnell called them outrageous and reprehensible. Adam Kinzinger, a fellow Republican, says, let's kick her out of the Republican conference. That's something that they can do with a simple vote. If you remember, Marjorie Taylor Greene was stripped of her committee assignments earlier this year by the Democrats for social media posts that promoted violence against Democratic leaders, as well as some really wild conspiracy theories. But the problem, you know, I talked to a couple Republicans yesterday who said the problem is that the votes probably would not be there to punish Marjorie Taylor Greene, to kick her out of the conference, even though that's precisely, you know, what they did to Liz Cheney in stripping her of her leadership position just a couple weeks ago for continuing to criticize Donald Trump. So, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, this fight between Republicans and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Republicans and Liz Cheney comes down to, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans' support for Donald Trump. And because Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of his strongest allies in Congress, I think there's a lot of Republicans that are very reluctant to go up against her, because essentially it will be seen as going up against Donald Trump, who remains enormously popular to this day in the Republican Party.
And we'll leave it there for this week. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. Take care.
That's Scott Wong. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill. He was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in Washington.